You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 369 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Catwoman number 61, Green Lantern War Journal number 5, Nightwing number 110, Superman number 10, Titans number 7, Wonder Woman number 5, and Sweet Tooth season 2 episode 8, The Ballad of the Last Man, and the season finale. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. Warner Brothers Discovery has become the first Hollywood conglomerate to turn a profit for its streaming unit for a full year. In 2023, the company reported a profit of $103 million compared to a loss of nearly $2.1 billion for all of 2022 for what it's called its direct-to-consumer, or DTC, unit.
Cue the sarcastic clap from the crowd, Drew. We all know how they managed to do this. It's easy to turn a profit when you could just cut every project, slash the budget of everything, and get tax write-offs for all of it. Congrats, I guess, David Zaslav. You made money at all costs. Well done.
Wasn't it just last week we were talking about them scrapping the cartoon?
Coyote versus Acme.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought so.
That helped turn a profit, Drew.
Yep.
And the thing is like they eked out a profit. Like for us, $100 million is a lot of money, right? That's a lot of cash, but it's effectively breaking even for them. But God. I hate it, Drew. I hate everything about this news story because they're going to take this and run with it and be like, look, see, we're doing it right. We get it. We figured it out. And all of the wrong lessons have been learned from this. It took basically screwing over every possible person that they could, slashing the budget of every possible project they could, and they barely eked out a profit. But the spreadsheet shows a good number, Drew. So it was all worth it.
Yeah, it sure was. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. The Showdown of the Century returns to print in two new omnibus editions. DC vs. Marvel Omnibus and the DC Marvel Amalgam... I don't think I've ever said this word out loud. Amalgam Age Omnibus are both headed back to print for the first time in decades. The 960-page DC vs. Marvel Omnibus will feature cover art by John Romita Jr. and the 1,024-page DC Marvel The Amalgam Age Omnibus will feature wraparound art by Dave Gibbons and Angus McKay. Both retail for $150 each and go on sale August 6. I don't know if you've ever seen it or read it before, but I remember when it came out in the early 90s, it was a big deal. Everybody seemed to be picking it up. So I remember reading these stories way back when. I don't know if I'm that interested in picking up the omnibuses, honestly.
I'm aware of their existence, Drew, but I've definitely never read them. And I think it's really cool that they're putting it out. But an omnibus is a pretty big commitment, pun intended. I don't know that I'm that curious. You know what I mean? But I do think it's cool that they're putting it back out. I am honestly a little bit surprised that we've not seen that come back, Drew. Especially in this era of comics that we're in, which is just incredibly metafictional. And they're like writing stories about stories. And both Marvel and DC are doing comics that are basically the other company's characters with a slight wink and nudge. I'm surprised this has never come back. I mean, I know that they've both since gotten bought out by larger companies who, as we just discussed, really only care about numbers on a spreadsheet. But you know what generally puts pretty good numbers on a spreadsheet?
Reprints, because they don't have to pay for them to begin.
I don't know. But yeah, see, I think these will sell okay, Drew. But, I mean, they are older, and I think there is a limited audience to that. I don't know how much of a newer audience you're going to grab with those. Again, because an omnibus is everything, right? I don't know necessarily how big those comics are going to be, but you tend to get reprints. Drew, I agree. If we're looking at it from a profit margin perspective, you're not paying anybody anything new. But the way, the best way for comics, we've talked about this all the time, to move forward is to grab that young audience and get their claws into that audience and get them buying comics. And a giant omnibus is not for that crowd.
Definitely not. I'm an adult and I don't even want to pay $150 for them. Oh, man. So, yeah, I agree with you. We do have some comics coming out that are geared for a younger audience, but a lot of the comics we read are geared for older people.
Which is obviously great for us. But I do think that, I do think on the publishing end, DC is trying to grab that audience as much as they can. But I'm not criticizing. I'm glad that they are putting these out because I definitely think there's an audience for them. However, I don't know that it's as large of an audience as DC is probably hoping it is.
All right, well, let's move on to our next bit of DC news. DC has also announced the release dates for its first wave of new Elseworlds titles. A new title will publish monthly from June, starting with Gotham by Gaslight, the Kryptonian Age number 1, followed by the Dark Knights of Steel All Winter number 1. In July, DC vs. Vampire World War V number 1. In August, Batman and the Barbarian number 1. And Green Lantern Dark number 1 in October. And Batman Nightfare number 1 in November. So they got quite a few titles coming out.
Yeah, Drew, I'm really excited by this. I'm not shocked that the Elseworlds label is coming back, considering that's the label that DC is trying to use for a film and other live action projects. So it would make sense if you're trying to lean into that to bring that back into the general consciousness, right? Because otherwise you're referencing something from 20 years ago. It's been a long time since Elseworlds has officially been something that DC's doing. You could argue that there's a lot of books that, you know, technically should and would fall under that category, but they weren't technically Elseworlds. Dark Knights of Steel, for example, was not an Elseworlds story, but I think is probably retroactively being added under that label, as it should. I mean, it has all of the hallmarks of what you would expect from that kind of story. So I think it's great, Drew. I love that they're bringing it back purposefully, because I think Elseworlds is something that is a really good idea and leads to really creative takes and visions on the DC universe that you wouldn't get with continuity stories. It's the same thing as why I like the Black Label, Drew, because it allows, you know, writers and artists to really be free to tell the story that they want to tell without needing to meet some sort of, you know, status quo criteria. I like it. This is awesome. It's awesome that the name itself is being brought back. Again, I would argue that DC didn't completely stop doing them, but having the Elseworlds name and label back is exciting.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. Ever since 2020, DC has broken with industry tradition and published its new comics on Tuesdays rather than Wednesdays. At the Comics Pro event in Pittsburgh, however, it announced that it will be returning to a Wednesday release date in July in response to reader and retailer feedback. Collected editions and graphic novels will continue to release on Tuesdays. I find that interesting that they're reverting back to Wednesdays. And maybe they had too many complaints about it.
I'm not surprised either, or Drew, that they're doing this, because it has to be inconvenient for comic book stores to be getting stuff on separate days, and also both for the consumer and again for the store, because on Wednesday is comic book day, and so people come in to check their pull box, and you know, now maybe you get some people coming in on Tuesday and some on Wednesday or whatever. You know, it's just easier for everybody involved if there's a reason, Drew, that it was a uniform standard, because it was best for everyone. I don't really know why DC thought that they had like some, you know, when they did this, Drew, that they thought they had found some sort of exploit or like market weakness that they could take advantage of. And really, it's just because that's what it's best for everyone, not because other companies were just missing some sort of magical money-making technique.
Yeah, I don't know if they thought that putting the books out on Tuesday, people would be excited to get those, come in and get those books early or something. I don't know what their thought behind it was, but it only makes sense that everything comes in at the same time. It makes it easier to put the books out, put them in, like you said, the pull boxes and stuff like that, just doing it all at once. I wouldn't be surprised if comic shops were getting them on Tuesday and just holding them until they got the rest of the stuff on Wednesday and just putting them in there.
I'm sure. I mean, that wouldn't shock me at all. You know, it's possible I could see an argument for someone who doesn't really know comic books, too, that, like, if ours come out on Tuesday, people will come in and buy ours, and then they won't buy any other ones because they've already come in. And it's like, okay, maybe theoretically, but that's not how it works in practice. People are going to buy what they're going to buy. Just wait one extra day to get the stuff that they want to get. I don't know for sure, Drew. I don't really remember who was responsible for this decision, but I have a pretty good inkling of who it was and who really was the mastermind behind these plans. So, yeah. The important thing is that they realized that, oh, wait, this is just really dumb and there are no benefits whatsoever to doing this. Let's just, you know, do what everybody else is doing.
All right, and moving on to our last bit of DC news. The next phase of Dawn of DC has been announced, and if you've been paying attention to the recent developments in comics, then it should come as no surprise who the main antagonist is going to be, Amanda Waller. Writer Mark Waid and artist Dan Mora are uniting for Absolute Power, a new 4-issue limited event series launching in July. Before that, however, there'll be 2 special issues, the 2024 Absolute Power Free Comic Book Day Special Edition is available on, you guessed it, Free Comic Book Day, which falls on Saturday, May 4th. The issue contains a new 12-page story by Waid with art by Mikhail Janin, as well as a recap of things that have led up to this event, and also a preview of Absolute Power Number 1. It'll be followed in June by the Absolute Power Ground Zero one-shot, which is said to bridge the gap between the conclusion of the Superman House of Brainiac arc and with Waller's plans in the Absolute Power.
I am curious to see what the Amanda Waller plot is going to be exactly, Drew. I maintain that this does not feel like the Amanda Waller character I'm personally familiar with, but it's possible that they can tell a good story with it, Drew, and I will wait to see, but I need to be convinced. Let's put it that way.
You always need to be convinced. I'm happy that Mark Waid is the one that's behind this event. I'm more positive about that than if other people are behind the event. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah. I mean, we both enjoy Taylor, for example, and yet his event has sort of flopped, in my opinion. So, which is a little bit of a surprise because I had really been enjoying a lot of the stuff that he's doing. But yeah, we'll see.
Yep, we'll see. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
As the temperatures get cooler, let's think back to a time where monsters fascinated our young minds, where haunted houses and flying saucers were the stuff of fantastical dreams. Come relive those wonderful times with us every Monday at 5 p.m., It's Monster Attack on the ESO Network.
Hey, Leah.
Hey, Sean.
You know what now is a good time for?
What's that?
A promo for the Soul Forge podcast.
The Soul Forge? What's that?
Oh, it's a show. It's a podcast all about sex and dating.
Love and relationships.
Pop culture and movie reviews.
Adventure.
Almost anything you can think of.
Definitely.
What is it?
The Soul Forge.
The Soul Forge podcast.
Think about it.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
Let's talk Catwoman number 61. Gotham City. Catwoman Eco Hazwaga and Tomcat are teaching the Hazwagas, who didn't stay away from the docks like they were told, a lesson. Ico receives a call from Selena asking how things are going. Dario calls Selena Mama Cat and Ico Baby Cat. Rychat Nuclear Power Containment Site, Aperopes Forest, Markovia. Catwoman makes her way into a radioactive site where there was a nuclear meltdown. Catwoman is after Black Glass Corium. Just after 2 minutes in the presence of raw corium, a person takes enough radiation to be dead in a week. Why does Catwoman want it? Because it's a challenge. The unstealable score. Catwoman plans to exchange her sample to a morally sound, interested party and have the capes contain the rest. Catwoman takes the prettiest jewel she's ever held and encases it in lead. Outside the silo, Catwoman hears a truck. Opportunists that probably saw Catwoman come in. Catwoman fights her way out. The men in the hazmat suits shoot at her, but she is able to take cover in a different round building. Catwoman realizes this was a stupid idea. The corium was more toxic than she anticipated, and she underestimated how hard she would have to fight to get out of there. Catwoman realizes she is going to die here again and again, too weak to even crawl away from the source and save herself. Inside the round building is a cat that tells her not to die and scratches her arm. A humanoid cat shadow appears behind the cat and tells Selena she is the one that looks after cats. The luckiest and best of them gain her favor, the favor of rebirth. Catwoman is able to grab a hostage and get away. Catwoman doesn't make it far before she collapses in the snow. Superman shows up and states he couldn't ignore Catwoman's pain. Catwoman gives Superman the sample and tells him to destroy the rest so no one else can get hurt. Superman stays with Catwoman as she fights through the pain and tells her she can rest now.
Drew, I sort of got what they were going for with this being like a heist she would never try normally because it's impossible, right? Like, she can't normally steal this because it would kill her. She knows that. And so what better time to do it than knowing that she essentially can burn a life stealing the unstealable score? I get the perspective of what they're doing, Drew. But this came after a couple issues where I felt like we established that she was not going to just throw them away. So it felt a little bit at odds with what I thought was a like slightly readjusted perspective of hers.
Totally agree with you, because I'm pretty sure it was last issue we talked about that, how she decided she wasn't going to throw them away, but here we see it. I like how the comic pointed out she realized this was a really stupid idea, because honestly it was. She didn't even go in with a hazmat suit like the other dudes did.
Honestly, no, but she went in with a fur coat, a fur cape. Like, what the hell are we doing here?
That is a very good question. This was pretty much a waste for her.
Drew, the thing I didn't really appreciate was it felt like right at the end it tried to spin it as her doing the right thing. Like it felt like they tried to like emotionally blackmail us by putting Superman there and having him be good guy Superman and sort of be like, you did right, Selena. It's like, but did she though? It seems like she could have just left it there because the number that it did on her does not suggest that anybody else would have been successful in grabbing it either.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It just was not a good idea. We got this stupid heist. What is next? Is she just going to keep burning lives?
I guess Drew, I gotta be honest with you though, this issue felt like it potentially negated the urgency of these lives in a sense, because it felt to me like the cat god also acknowledges that this was a kind of a dumb idea and that other people would not be pleased with Selena using her gifts for this. But the cat god explicitly says, I actually kind of dig it. I like that you're doing this. You continue to have my favor. And it, to me, Drew, it felt like there was potentially more to be had there if she continued to appease what the god was wanting from her. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that was sort of what I got from that conversation.
So do you think there's an ulterior motive going on there?
Oh, I'm sure there is. You know, I'm sure this story is going to start to turn more to what is actually going on and what is this, you know, deity getting out of it. I don't know. I could be way off base. I have no, because, you know, I'm not writing the story yet. What do I know? But I don't know, man. I just have this, my takeaway from that conversation was that that God could easily decide to give Selena more lives if it wanted to, and it seemed inclined to do so, at least at that moment.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that, because that's what it felt like to me, too. I guess we'll just have to see where they're going to go with this story. There may be more to it than they've been letting on, so. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Green Lantern, War Journal number 5. Metropolis, Steelworks. John Stewart thanks John Henry Irons for looking after his mother at Steelworks. Stewart hopes to be back before his mother wakes up. Nat tells Stewart that his mother is already awake. Her injury has worsened, and now she is hallucinating, talking to John, his father, and sister Ellie. John visits his mother before he leaves. His mother starts talking to him like he is his father. When his mother brings up Ellie, John tells her Ellie is gone. When John's mother starts to freak out, John decides to make a construct version of Ellie. The Amazon Rainforest. Lantern Stewart and Lantern Shepherd are surprised to find the mark of the Dark Stars. John wonders if they are tied to the Radiant Dead. Suddenly, Lantern Stewart and Lantern Shepherd are surrounded by other Green Lanterns from the United Planets. They order Lantern Stewart to surrender Varon's ring or die. Varon appears, attacking the Lanterns of the United Planets. Varon tells John Stewart he is too late. The planet is his, down to its very core. Next issue, end and beginning.
Drew, this was a quick read. When I got to the end of the comic, I was like, wait, that's it? It flowed well. It wasn't necessarily that I was like completely engulfed in the story, but it really flew by. I was very caught off guard when the issue ended.
I was too. And basically, it had two parts. We had John dealing with his mother. Then we had John going into the rainforest, you know, doing their investigation on the Radiant Dead. And I enjoyed it. I have to agree with you. It went quick. But I sure enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to what's happening next, because it feels like we're finally getting into the meat of the story now.
I agree. I'm hopeful that this is a longer story, Drew, because it has been very methodical getting going, which is fine. When you're going to tell a long term story, I'm great with that. My problem is when it's only supposed to be a 6-part story, and you take 4 issues setting the story up. I tend to have some problems with that. I don't know. I'm hopeful. This seems to be written like they've got time to tell the story. And I hope that that's the case, because I'm pretty bought into what they're doing. I'm very engaged by the premise. But on the other hand, though, Drew, if it wraps itself up pretty quickly, I'm going to be left pretty unsatisfied with that.
Yeah, we'll just have to see what happens next. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Nightwing number 110. Arkham Tower, Gotham. Day 1 of Beast World. Apex Ava kills a spore that enters her room, and then she eats it. She is transformed. 3 days later, Nightwing calls Superman John Kent and tells him that Damian is missing. Nightwing and Superman invade the Iceberg Lounge and learn that the missing Beast people have been taken to the pit. Half a mile under Gotham, Superman and Nightwing find Damian. He's been transformed into a cat named Mr. Mittens and is fighting a grizzly bear in some sort of fight club. Ava Apex is telling Mr. Mitten to kill his opponent, but Superman intervenes. Superman flies Nightwing and Damian out of there as spores start chasing him. Above ground, the spore flies out of Damian's mouth and is destroyed by Superman's heat vision. Nightwing and Robin block the exit to the fight club as Apex Ava tries to escape. Superman lifts the fight club and flies it to Gotham Prison. Ava Apex, who now has green skin, transforms into a bird and flies away. She tells Nightwing she looks forward to hunting him one day. Hours later, beneath the Gotham Zoo, all the beasts that were in the fight club have been secured and are being cared for by the doctors and zoologist. The end.
I don't know, Drew, if you noticed the cover for this issue, though, but by far the best part of the issue, referencing the very upset women yelling at a cat, and it's Nightwing pointing, like, doing the meme as he's pointing at, and it's the cat Robin sitting there. That was hilarious.
I didn't notice that. I'm going to have to go back and look at that.
It's a very common meme, but...
Oh, I've seen it many times in many versions. I'm going to have to go check this cover out.
Oh, yeah. No, it is absolutely the best part of the issue. I didn't mind the premise of this, Drew. I think it's interesting that there's effectively, it felt like after this is all wrapped up that there's going to be what is effectively a murderous Beast Boy out there. This Ava Apex is going to essentially be like, you know, Beast Boy, but evil and a little bit like a Kraven the Hunter style character. That's interesting to me, Drew. I don't dislike that as a premise. This story itself was forgettable, I would say, which is a little it felt like a very like typical tie-in kind of throwaway issue to an event. What was disappointing with that though, Drew, was that this was Nightwing, who is arguably the main character of this story. And it's Tom Taylor, who is the writer of the event. So that was a little disappointing for me, because I would expect a little bit better from the guy writing the main event. But, I mean, it was fine. Again, within the context of being a quick, light tie-in to the ongoing major event, you could do a lot worse than this.
I'm looking at the cover right now. I see what you mean. I didn't notice that before, but now that I'm actually looking at it and you pointed it out, I see it now. That's freaking hilarious. Yeah, I have to agree with you. This was a throwaway story pretty much. The only thing we got out of it basically was a new villain for Nightwing, which I'm sure Tom Taylor is going to revisit here in the near future. So it will be interesting to revisit that character, because I'm hoping he can do something interesting with her. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Superman number 10. It's been 4 days since Superman and Marilyn Moonlight were transported to the past. Superman is still healing from the kryptonite poisoning, so he doesn't have full access to his powers yet. They come upon a robbery where all the victims are dead. Marilyn points to the holes in the wagon. They are not made by bullets, but lasers. Whoever did this might have the right kind of tech to get them home. Bibbo Saloon. Superman enters and calls out Terra Man for killing people. They decide to settle this the old-fashioned way with a gun duel. Terra Man asks Superman where his piece is. Superman states he doesn't need one. Terra Man draws early, shooting Superman. Superman is unharmed. He has his powers back. Terra Man tries shooting the townspeople, but Superman catches the bullets. Terra Man tries to escape on his flying metal steed, but Marilyn Moonlight stops him. Superman puts him in jail while Marilyn gathers Terra Man's tech. Marilyn tells Superman her origin story about how she stood up for the oppressed and saved lives. She eventually retired and died in bed surrounded by family and friends. Someone brought her back and turned her into a ghost. She has been helping people out until she can find out who brought her back. Superman and Marilyn return to the present. When Superman returns to Supercorps, Lena tells Superman to fly away. Before he can, Superman is hit with kryptonite gas. Farm and Graf want Superman to join their Lex Luthor Revenge Squad. Next issue, Lena Luthor versus the Revenge Squad.
Pass.
Brilliant issue. Brilliant. Oh my gosh.
I was not surprised, but I can't believe I'm saying this, Drew, but I was disappointed that Williamson cut the Old West story as short as he did. Again, I'm not surprised that he would do that, because he only ever just throws ideas out there and just expects that to be good enough. And that was a classic Williamson move. We're like, ooh, what if we make an Old West character and we throw Superman back into the Old West and then I end the story there?
See, the thing is, with this story going on right now, we just finished up the Nightwing Pirate story, and we saw Tom Taylor spend some time with him in that world. I know you really wanted it to go on a little longer, but we got to visit that world for a little bit where he was a pirate. This was like a one-issue, one-and-done thing.
Not saying
I would like to see more Williamson story going on, but...
That's the thing, right? I'm like, I need to be careful what I wish for here, because, like, I don't really care for anything more of Williamson doing anything, but if you're going to put him in the Old West, like, let's do some Old West stories. That was not very satisfying. They resolved it so quickly, Drew. It was literally one of the first things they did. They were like, oh, hey, maybe we could find some sort of time machine to get us back. And then they, like, trip over a time machine. It was just, like, give some sort of difficulty to the story. Some sort of anything, Drew.
Yes. And next issue, we have the Revenge Squad. So it looks like Williamson's going to be putting Superman on this Revenge Squad, which honestly doesn't make any sense to me, but I am not looking forward to that story.
No, me neither. Especially because it seems like the little kids from the Old West, to me, Drew, that seemed to be setting up that those are the two villains grown up, essentially. And I don't care. I just do not care.
Same here. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Titans number 7. Titans Tower. Cyborg and Raven boom tube in and find the tower flooded. Raven tells Cyborg it is Tempest. She will face him. You find Brother Eternity. Starfire is fighting Xander, who tells her that he served a higher being, one greater than her precious Exile. Starfire's family stood against his god for too long, so he had to remove them. Xander made a deal with the Dominators and the Citadel. In return for his services, the Dominators gave Xander the last pieces of his god and told him where to find him. Cyborg blasts Xander and helps Starfire to her feet. Xander attacks Cyborg with a Neospore to his mouth. Batgirl is attacked by a Nightwing, Fox, and Tempest. Raven shows up and stops Tempest's magic. Flash zooms Batgirl and himself to Corridor B. Raven teleports Tempest to Corridor B, where they have a trap laid. Tempest is brought down by Flash dehydration. When the spore leaves Tempest's body, Raven zaps it. Cyborg is able to fight off the Necrospore inside of him because the spore is having trouble latching onto his insides. Cyborg coughs out the spore and Starfire kills it. Starfire punches out Xander. Minutes later, Starfire is able to draw the spore out of Nightwing. She kills it with her teeth and spits it out. Starfire states she will not be enslaved again. As punishment for his actions, Raven banishes Xander to the Phantom Zone. Raven tells the other Titans not to concern themselves with the ethics of her actions. Xander is now in purgatory. They have a world to save from the damage he has done. To be continued in Titans Beast World number 4, which we reviewed last week. So I'm wondering, why did DC distribute these out of order?
Great question. They absolutely should have been. But, I mean, issue 4 of that, Drew, Beast World story would have been a lot more clear if we had read this one first. Not because it was important to the story, but things happened that were undone in this issue that we didn't know were undone yet. So it cheapened the stakes of this issue because we knew Nightwing had to be... I mean, of course Nightwing was going to be fine, right? But we knew that whatever his transformation was not particularly permanent or long-lasting because he was already Nightwing again in the issue after this that we had read ahead of time. I just don't understand why you would publish these things in the order like that they have.
Somebody in editorial's not doing their job. And we've kind of seen this over the past year, even longer even. But it seems to be getting worse.
It's bad, Drew. I mean, these need to be read in order. Now, I would argue, frustratingly, Drew, that you could probably skip the Titans portion of the book entirely and not really miss out. This was not a satisfying conclusion to this part of the story, Drew. It was just so... Again, it was the same thing I said about the last Titans issue, where it had been building up to this, you know, Necrostar and Brother Eternity and all of this had been the major thing. And I know that led to the Beast World story, but then all of the Brother Eternity and Necrostar part of the story has been resolved in Titans extremely easily. The whole plot started with Wally dying and them trying to solve the murder of how he died. And then the actual conclusion to that was extremely easy. And then again, this issue, everything is just the easiest possible out that could end the story quickly is what happens. I just was not satisfied with any of the, like, stakes involved in this story.
Yeah, it could have been a lot better.
Now, I don't think it's necessarily bad writing. You know, like, I didn't hate my experience reading it, but I wasn't... I know he can do better, Drew. I've read enough of Taylor's stuff to know that he is better than this, than what he's putting out right now. And it's frustrating for me because this story, Nightwing is transformed back easily. Cyborg gets the Necrostar in him and is totally fine. In fact, he's completely unbothered by it. Starfire, the whole thing has been, don't let these things get near your mouth. And Starfire lets it jump to her mouth so that she can bite it and spit it back out. Because no other hero is capable of that, Drew?
Yeah. I don't know. This event has definitely gone off the rails, and it seems like Tom Taylor's writing has been affected by it. I'm wondering, you know, once we get back to regular stuff past the event, we'll see his writing go back to normal.
Yeah, I have no doubt that when we get back to Nightwing proper, that it will be, you know, a more satisfying story. And when we get back to Titans proper, it will be a more satisfying story. But I've just been very disappointed by this event, Drew, because I wasn't expecting it to be groundbreaking or amazing, but everything's been too easy. The Nightwing books, the Titans books, and the main story, everything has come a little too easily. Now, I will say at least the main story has had actual hardships. We just saw Gar get blown up in space, right? So that's an actual twist that the heroes are going to have to overcome. And I'm hoping that that too doesn't get resolved super easily. But I've been disappointed by how quickly and easily everything has been resolved. I know that we're reading superhero comics and that the superheroes are going to win. I can accept that, but at least make the journey interesting to get there. Don't just essentially, well, you know that they're going to win, so they won. That's not satisfying.
No, it's not. All right, well, let's move on to our last issue for this week. Wonder Woman number 5. Diana is sitting in a diner with Cassie Sandmark, Donna Troy, and Yara Flor. Diana tells the Wonder Woman that they are going to settle this like Amazons. Diana tells them to choose their contest. Yara chooses arrows, Cassie chooses arms, and Donna chooses something different. Yara Flor challenges Diana to a contest of arrows. First, they fire one arrow at each other. Arrow tip hits arrow tip, and both arrows fall harmlessly to the ground. For the second round, they each use two arrows. Tip hits tip again, and the outcome is the same. This continues on until the women are using four arrows each. On the fourth round, three arrows connect tip to tip once again, but the fourth arrow gets through. Yara Flor is pierced through the abdomen by Diana's arrow. Yara Flor's arrow whizzes past Diana's left shoulder, missing her. Yara Flor has lost. Diana forces Yara Flor to swear by the gods that she will stay out of Diana's war. Diana's next contest is with Cassandra Sandmark. Cassie chooses to arm wrestle Diana and loses. Cassie also swears by the gods that she will stay out of Diana's war. The last contest Diana has is with Donna Troy. Donna chooses to battle Diana in a video game that looks a lot like Injustice. Donna chooses to fight as Batman, while Diana chooses to fight as Superman. At first, Diana seems to be struggling at controlling her character, but eventually turns the tables on Donna Troy by besting her with a KO move. Donna throws her controller at the television, cracking the screen. Diana reveals that she has been practicing with Donna's friends. Donna swears by the gods that she will stay out of Diana's war. Because Wonder Woman was able to defeat his human army, Sergeant Steel decides to gather a new army, an army of madness, power, obsession, magic, savagery, divinity, and hate. It is an ensemble of villains never united before. A rogues gallery for Wonder Woman that includes Giganta, Circe, Dr. Psycho, Silver Swan, Angleman, and Grail, the daughter of Darkseid. Diana returns home to her apartment to find the Wonder Girls waiting for her. They tell her that they considered their holy oaths and what they owe the gods and what they owe Diana, and it's not even close. Yara Flor says, F the gods. To be continued. We also had a backup story, World Finest Part 3. Themyscira. Trinity races Superman John Kent and Batman Damian Wayne on Kangaback. Winner gets to decide their name. Trinity wants to call their team Trinity's Trinity. Damian hates the name. He chooses Delta Force. Trinity counts down and then takes off first, cheating. Damian, who knew she was going to cheat, asks John if he ever tires of being wrong. The boys chase after Trinity, who is taunting them about eating her dust and smelling Kanga farts. John warns Trinity about the cliff, but Trinity doubles down and tries to jump over it. Later, John and Damien stand over Trinity as she wakes up from unconsciousness. Trinity grins, stating she won. Trinity states that there is a new generation, a generation of hope, Generation S. The three heroes celebrate their new name with a cup of ambrosia.
I didn't enjoy the backup as much as I've enjoyed some of the other ones that we had, Drew. I didn't think it was bad, but it didn't grab me in the same way. And I don't know if the fact that Generation S didn't really grab me as a team name either, but that whatever.
Before we move on, I thought the backup was funny. I liked it because it was humorous. I didn't care for the Gen S name either. I thought they could come up with something better. And who knows, this may just have been, they may have done it just to be funny, and they actually end up with some different name later on. But I did enjoy the story. I thought it was funny.
No, I didn't think it was bad. It just didn't grab me in the same way. It may be because it was a little bit shorter, but whatever. The main story, though, Drew, I really liked seeing the Sovereign put together his team and seeing the way in which he went about recruiting them, where he put, you know, Sarge Steele is in charge of getting most of them, with the exception of Grail, and, kind of setting up each of those characters. That was really cool. I also liked the other half of the story, which was Wonder Woman unintentionally setting up her team, right? Trying her best to not have her own team. And I liked the different challenges that they tried to, you know, best Wonder Woman in order to let her, help. And I like at the end, Drew, that they all decide collectively, like, whatever, we're going to help you anyway. You can't stop us.
What's funny about that is the fact that I think Wonder Woman would do the exact same thing.
Yeah, I agree. What I liked about it, Drew, I liked that Wonder Woman won all of the challenges, right? Because of course she did. She's Wonder Woman. But ultimately, like, her, not true sidekicks, right? But the Wonder Girls are who they are also because they're not just going to be like, Wonder Woman beat me in a video game, so I guess I won't help. Like, of course they're going to help. That's what I loved about the issue, Drew, is it tries to show Wonder Woman doing her best to essentially protect them from getting hurt and potentially dying. But Tom King realizes, like, that's dumb. Like, yeah, she might try to do that, but they wouldn't listen. Of course they're going to help her, as they should. They should help her. I honestly would have been annoyed if that had worked, Drew. If Donna Troy, of all people, is satisfied with losing a video game being the reason she can't help Deanna, like, come on.
Exactly. I enjoyed this issue a lot. So, and it was interesting to see that team put together because those characters have never been united against Wonder Woman before. Wonder Woman honestly doesn't have a rogues gallery like some of the other heroes do, where we see recurring villains with her very often. One of the people that I noticed was missing from this was Cheetah, and we've probably seen her the most go up against Wonder Woman. But some of these characters have gone up against Wonder Woman a few times, but they're not always, Wonder Woman doesn't always have reoccurring villains, so it's interesting they're putting this team together. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Sweet Tooth.
What if you could bring three experienced producers into your home each week to discuss your favorite movies and the people that made them? That's Tales from Hollywoodland. Your hosts, Arthur, Julian, and Steve, collectively have years of showbiz producing experience. Their weekly show is a fast-paced, fun, and very conversational experience, like spending a good time with your best movie-loving friends and family. Tales from Hollywoodland is available wherever fine podcasts are found. See you at the movies.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Tony.
Do you like ads about podcasts?
You know it.
How about ads about Doctor Who podcasts?
Even better.
Well, you're in luck, because this is an ad about a Doctor Who podcast.
Wow, I love it.
And you'll love us, the Watchathon of Rassilon, a podcast about Doctor Who.
I'll buy 12.
Actually, it's free.
I'll buy 13, then.
All right, let's talk Sweet Tooth, Season 2, Episode 8, The Ballad of the Last Man. Still at the zoo and upset, Dr. Singh enters the room with purple flowers, sits down, and begins to breathe deeply until he passes out. Back in Yellowstone, Tiger dies while in the arm of her friend Becky, while Gus and Jeppard stand by helpless. Back at the zoo, Johnny packs up his bags to leave, but General Abbott stops him. Abbott convinces Johnny to come with him to Evergreen. Dr. Singh wakes up surrounded by purple flowers and wonders why he's still alive. Dr. Singh pulls Gus's cut-off antler out of his pocket and smiles. Amy tells Becky that she doesn't have much longer. It is her turn to watch over the hybrids. The hybrids say goodbye to their mother, and Becky leads them to a safer place. Just as Abbott is about to lead his army into Gus's sanctuary, Johnny pulls his gun on Abbott. Johnny tries to shoot Abbott in the head, but his gun has no bullets. General Abbott hugs Johnny and then tells him he can go. As Johnny is walking away, General Abbott shoots him in the back. The last men invade Gus's sanctuary and fall into their booby traps. General Abbott runs into Jeppard, who beats the crap out of him. As Jeppard is about to choke Abbott to death, Abbott kicks him in his bad knee. Jeppard warns Sweet Tooth that Abbott is coming. When Becky and Wendy board the skylift, Wendy decides she can't leave her mom behind. Wendy jumps off the skylift at the last moment, leaving Becky unable to stop her. Wendy is caught by one of the last men. Becky appears and saves her. Wendy learns that Becky is her sister. Amy hides Gus and traps him under the stairs. She waits for Abbott at the door of the cabin with a gun. When Amy's gun jams, Abbott makes his way into the cabin. Amy shows Abbott that she has the sickness. Abbott backs away. Amy jabs Abbott in the neck with two needles that Gus showed her earlier. Abbott drops the treatment for the sickness and Gus grabs it. Abbott grabs Amy's gun and chases after Gus. Abbott shoots Gus in the leg and he falls to the ground. Abbott is about to shoot Gus when Gus yells, "Stop!" A bison charges Abbott and knocks him to the ground. Abbott shoots Gus in the back with an arrow before he dies. Jeppard holds a memorial service for Amy, and the hybrid kids say their goodbyes. Gus has a dream about his mother in Alaska. When Gus wakes up, the others are ready to go on a journey with him. Dr. Singh finds Gus's cabin and realizes that he has gone to Alaska. Zhang is informed that Abbott is dead, but they did recover Dr. Singh's tape recorder. Even though it's damaged, they believe they can get the full transcript of it. The episode ends with Zhang feeding raw meat to mysterious growling creatures in a cage.
Drew, I was pretty frustrated at different moments in this finale. There was a lot of really tired tropes and cliches that the show fell into that felt avoidable to me in situations that we didn't need to have. We had the classic character tries to shoot the gun but never bothered to check whether the gun was loaded, and then character thinks they get a walk away and then get shot in the back, and then the villain appears to be down but hits the hero's weakness, and then the villain appears to be dead but then gets the hero with one last shot before he dies. It was just a lot of things like we've seen in a lot of different movies and shows, and it was just I wanted the show to be better than that, I guess is the best way to put it. The one that really bothered me the most, that really had my eyes rolling though, Drew, was Abbott getting crushed by a bison stampede. Drew, he's dead. I'm sorry. I cannot accept any version of Abbott being literally physically intact enough to be able to do anything, let alone even be alive. And for what, Drew? He gets one arrow shot off on Gus. Why? What does that accomplish for the show?
It didn't accomplish anything, Cletus. It was a waste of time.
It was a huge waste of time. And they try to get you with the fake out that we're burying Gus. Like, no, we know you're not burying Gus. I just, Drew, at least if they could have carried the cliffhanger over into the next season, I would argue strongly that that would have been a waste of the audience's time. But at least you could see the point, I guess, in a sense, because we wanted to end on a cliffhanger. This is how we're doing it. But they don't. They don't even do that. There's nothing that happens from Gus being effectively in a coma that they couldn't have just done. Like, there's nothing stopping the show from Gus just having a dream of his mom, so to speak, in Alaska, right? Like that could still happen. Big Man can still listen to the audio tapes. Bear can still see the papers on the story that his dad wrote. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all of those things can still happen without Gus being shot by Abbott for no reason. And again, I cannot emphasize this enough. They set up the scene where I just cannot accept Abbott being alive at that point. Drew, bison are huge. They are massive. The first one hitting him would have killed him. Let alone then an entire stampede running over him. I know that this seems like a small hill to die on, but it just made no... It's true, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have a villain die in an extremely over-the-top, convenient, Gus has animal summoning powers moment, and then have Abbott also still be fine.
That was one thing I did find interesting about this episode, was Gus being able to summon animals. I'm wondering if we're going to see that again in the future.
They've hinted that he's had a little bit something else mystical potentially going on for two seasons now, Drew. And I am very curious to see that get explained potentially, hopefully, or they just sort of keep leaving it nebulous. Again, having not read the comics, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. Are they making this up? Is that something that is more developed in the comics? Is that something we're going to see next season in season 3? I don't really know. I didn't hate the episode, Drew, but there were parts of it that I expected better from the show. Not dissimilar to my critique of the Beast World story that we've been getting. And really, as a season for me, Drew, I mentioned this last week, and my wife and I have been talking about it every episode that we've watched, is the tone this season was all over the map, depending on who was on screen. If it was the adult characters, it was the same, you know, relatively dark post-apocalyptic world in which most of humanity has died, and it's a dark world, it's a nasty world, and bad things happen, right? Big Man finds his wife in a body bag. Bear is a teenage girl and is killing people with her bare hands. You know what I mean? Like that level of brutality. And then if the animal kids are on screen, it's a happy-go-lucky, fun-time young kids adventure. And it was every time, Drew, every time those characters were on screen, it was like the screenwriters just completely flipped the genre of the show. And it was jarring. It was an all-season problem that kind of wore on me as the season went along. I got more and more tired of it because I was like, this doesn't match. I don't want to see these kids hopping, skipping, and, you know, having a fun kid time and then turn around and the next scene you show is something brutal and horrific. Like, those don't go together. You could argue that the show is trying to juxtapose the innocence of these kids with the reality of the world. But that's really not, I mean, even if that's what they were trying to do, what they instead did was just have two completely different tones that didn't go together. And I hope next season, because the kids are staying behind while Gus and the main crew go off to Alaska, I'm hoping that that stays a season 2 problem and that the show is able to focus more on a consistent tone next season.
Yeah, I'm happy we're moving on from General Abbott, because I'm curious to see what Shang is up to and what she has in those cages. I'm wondering if they're some sort of... I'm wondering if they're hybrids.
My suspicion is that they're hybrids. I'm with you there. The one thing I'm curious, Drew, is... how is she going to track him down? Is she going to track him down because the doctor... Also, this was another thing where, like, the convenience of the plot completely separated logic. Why on earth would they leave the map behind, Drew? Circled and conveniently even, like, drew a little symbol just in case it wasn't extremely abundantly clear. Hey, we're going here for anybody that comes to the house afterwards. Why would they leave that map behind for the doctor to find, Drew? Surely you can come up with a different way for him to figure it out.
Yes. We also saw... You know, when he went into he went in with the purple flowers and he fell unconscious. If you remember right, he had a dream about Alaska too, and he was there with Gus.
Yeah, so why can't that be the hunch that I could have, honestly, Drew, I could have accepted that as enough and let the show sort of be like, oh, there was some mystical stuff going on, and he just followed that hunch. I can buy that, Drew. It's a show about half-human, half-animal people. I can believe that amount of flour sent him an idea of where to go. You don't need to have characters inexplicably leave a sheet of paper that they need behind.
I know. But I am excited about the last season. So I'm hoping we get past some of these issues we had in season two and move on to a good final season.
Yeah, I want to be clear. Like, I'm critical because I like this show, and I still think, you know, the at the core of the show is a really, really interesting premise and a good set of characters. It was some of the extra stuff. It was a lot of like unforced errors this season that didn't need to happen that frustrated me. And I'm hoping that season three kind of will shuffle away from that. We'll have a different villain, as I think that will help, where the kids are going to be off on the sideline. I think that will help a lot too. But we'll see. I think it will maybe hopefully lead to a more focused final season as well, because we won't have three separate stories of characters all trying to converge. And I mean, in a sense, we'll probably have some of that again with villains chasing down Gus, but at least Gus's story itself will be the good guy story, so to speak, will be focused.
All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah. So we were trying to figure out when the last Elseworlds story came out. I didn't do enough research, Drew, to pinpoint the exact specific one, but Elseworlds as a imprint essentially stopped in 2004. And there were some other stories that were supposed to get published and didn't with the sort of cancellation of Elseworlds. A couple of them, there was, I never read this, Drew. I don't know if you this would have maybe been in your time. There was a Elseworlds title called Superman and Batman Generations. And number 3 had come out and was not well received. And so number 4 didn't come out, was one of the planned Elseworlds that didn't finish. And there was another one called Teen Titans Swinging Elseworlds Special that got canceled, but did eventually get published as Teen Titans Lost Annual number 1. So arguably, I think you could say that that was the last Elseworlds story that we saw, right? Because it was written originally to be an Elseworlds story.
That Generations one sounds familiar, but the Titans one isn't. Didn't sound familiar. It was around 2004 when I stopped getting comics. So
see, so what I'm hearing, Drew, is that it's your fault.
So 2004, that was 20 years ago they stopped Elseworlds. That's kind of crazy.
That's crazy. I did also, I wanted to throw in, I've listed this title before, but I wanted to throw in my personal favorite Elseworlds story is Superman War of the Worlds. It's exactly what the title sounds like. It's an adaptation of War of the Worlds, but with the Golden Age Superman. It's so good. It is by far my favorite Elseworlds story. It is a really good Superman story. It's also a really good War of the Worlds adaptation too. It's by Roy Thomas. Personally, my favorite Elseworlds story. Like I said earlier in the podcast, I'm really excited that they're bringing the label back, because I think you get stories like that, for example, where you can kind of play around with stuff and not really be beholden to any other, you know, pre-existing status quo.
All right. And for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about the show Lost, because I started rewatching it recently. Now, I didn't realize that show was from 2004, so it's 20 years old also. So,
wow. That kind of got away from me too. I don't think I realized Lost was that old.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either. And I was like, whoa, that's 20 years old. And I was looking for another show to watch, because I finished rewatching Game of Thrones. And the thing about Game of Thrones this time is when I rewatched it, I ended up liking the ending of it better. I don't know if it's because I already knew what to expect when I got there or what, but the second time of rewatching Game of Thrones, I enjoyed the ending better. So I was like, maybe I should rewatch Lost, because I remember not caring for that ending very much or something. So I remember like season 1 through 3 better than I do the end of the show. So I kind of want to rewatch it and see what I forget about the show, and see if I actually like the ending better or not the second time around. I started watching season one there, and I've been enjoying that. I remember really enjoying the first few seasons of that show, so we'll see how it goes.
That was all the rage. I remember when that was airing, man. That was like the last vestige of, you know, appointment viewing for live TV.
Yep. All right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about this week, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-455-8411. Leave us a message, text us, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right. Coming up next week, we've got Batman, The Brave and the Bold, number 9. We're only going to read the Tom King story. We got The Penguin, Amazon's Attack, Detective Comics, The Flash, Titans Beast World, and we're going to be reviewing the first episode of the DC Vertigo Netflix series, Bodies. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil fight. Beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the T Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.